Well, our regular host and hostess are not here. So I am going to, and my name is Louis Herrera, as if you guys haven't heard from me yet. Okay, well, we'll get to know each other and you'll learn to hate me. I mean, like me, I hope, because otherwise I'll feel rejected. Anyway, you guys are in for a great treat. Hymns International and Mr. James McCarthy are here to talk to you about technology and all the neat things. The eBod is a cool device. There's other devices that HIMS offers. So I will be quiet and go back and learn about this technology. But please give these people a big hand as they come out here to entertain us and give us an additional bit of information to benefit from technology. And James, welcome. And I hope that you and I can sit down and chat so I can talk you out of an eBod or something.
Thank you very much, Louis. I appreciate the MC honors. Yeah, for those of you who haven't heard, Bernice isn't making it to this year's meeting. She called me a couple of days ago. I think it's more health-related. Otherwise, she would certainly be here. I couldn't remember all the numbers that she kept rattling off to me, but she said something like 57 straight meetings. I'm not sure if that was a national or the California meetings. Maybe she was counting when they had one in Southern and one in Northern, so during those years. I understand that CCB is only going to meet once a year now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, probably economics it was a good concept to kind of meet regionally, you know, get a little closer to everybody one time in the North, one time in the South. But, I think this might be a good decision. A little switching it around a little bit can be good. I have a saying, change is good. So I'm wondering, in one sense, what all you want to hear about low vision, because I can talk about low vision technology for a long, long time. I can give you history. I can crack jokes. We can have a trivia contest. I can tell you about some of the new stuff that's come out. Can't tell you about any of the stuff that hasn't come out yet. I know some stuff. Most of the companies don't tell me their new stuff. I only know what my company's new stuff might be. But I don't talk about it anymore until I've seen it first. That's one of my rules now. Unless I've seen it, unless I've touched it, I'm not talking about it. So some of the faces I've seen, you know, have probably heard me before. Others haven't. So just so you know who I am, so James McCarthy. Bond is my middle name. I'm the James Bond of low vision. So I've been in this field for, this is my 33rd or 34th year. It's one of those, you know, you lose count of your age at some point. So that's kind of me in this field. Some people think I started when I was 16. No, that's about when I lost my vision. I had vision until I was 17, actually. And it's optic nerve atrophy. So for those of you who can relate to what optic nerve atrophy might be or know what it is, my vision is just light perception in my right eye, some light perception. My left eye is 20 over 400. So that means it's 5% vision. It's essential vision loss. So kind of relates to some of those who might have some form of macular or Stargardt's. I've actually had used a video magnifier since 1974. A lot of people don't even realize they made them back then. So here's some trivia. When did the first companies start who made video magnifiers? 1974. Yeah, that was a good guess. And where were these companies located? Southern California. The first three companies in the world who made video magnifiers, although there could be a gentleman in England that might, you know, have a right to dispute this a little bit, sort of like, you know, who was the first personal computer? Was it Apple? Was it Atari? Was it Commodore? You know, one of those. Was it Radio Shack? But the first three companies were actually here in Southern California. A company called Visual Tech, a company called Apollo Electronic Visual Aids, and a company called Expert Systems. And then later, there was a company called Pelco. So actually, the first four Verse 3 in the world, you know, not too many people dispute that. Although there is a company called Alpha Vision that started in England. I think I know someone that could probably answer the question, because I know the person who's actually the son of the person who started the business. So I think I'm going to ask him that. I've known him for years, but I've never asked him, when did your dad actually start the company? What year was it? So the year was 1970 and 71 when the first three companies started here in Los Angeles. Anyone know why? Why they started here? Dr. Sam Janinsky, exactly. He was a physics genius, mathematics genius. Well, more mathematics than physics, but and he worked for the RAND Corporation, which is located in Santa Monica. RAND was a think tank. Dr. Janinsky, not a medical doctor, an academic doctor in mathematics, he actually had low vision, born without corneas. And so some of his fellow employees actually developed what was the first video magnifier for his use. Then they put the technical information into the public domain and encouraged people to start a business and provide these for others with low vision. So that's why it was started here in Los Angeles. And bless his soul, Dr. Janinsky. He passed away a number, you know, maybe 5-7 years ago. Anybody know how long ago that was? Time flies. Yeah. But the people at CPS are still trying to do his good work, people at the Center for the Partially Sighted. So, okay, some of you got some history down. That's good. I actually have a unit, my unit from 1974, which is called a Visual Tech Mini Viewer, actually still works. That's right, they made them better in those days. Now everything is more disposable. Remember when your refrigerator would last 25 years? Yeah. Now, when you go to Fry's Electronics or Sears, they tell you they're going to last 8 years. Remember when your big TV, the CRTs, would last 20 years? Yeah, now the expected life is 6 to 8 years of an LCD monitor, an LCD TV. Everything's disposable now in our society. Okay, so about some of the low vision. I'm going to then talk about, and you can feed in, ask questions about product names you've heard, or pretty much any question about low vision. If I can give you some guidance on that, if I can give you an answer that I know to be true, or I'll tell you if it's only partially true, I'll ask the audience if you can fill in any of the gaps. Feel free, and we'll try to fill that in. Where my knowledge gets a little scarce is when it gets a little too medical into the optometric and ophthalmic field. I really don't like saying things that doctors should know that I don't know. I know a lot of it because I talk with a lot of doctors around the country as I travel around the country. But I don't like to say medical things that I don't know. That's one area I stay away from. Last year there was a product that HIMSS introduced. And since I'm the president of HIMSS, some of you may know that. HIMSS has been known to be a quality braille company for about the last 8 to 10 years. It's one of the two largest refreshable braille companies in the world. And 5 years ago, I decided to accept a position to become the president of HIMSS. I actually moved from the Silicon Valley to Austin, Texas, the Silicon Valley of Texas. My wife still lives in Mountain View, so I'm always back in California seeing her as much as possible. And I moved because the company had a real commitment toward product quality and a real commitment toward engineering. It's the only company that I was really associated with as an employee of the company that when you have an idea, they don't say immediately, well, that can't be done. Well, that costs too much money to do. Well, that takes too long to do, which is, I'm not sure why, but that's kind of a trademark of engineers or engineering departments. Probably when you get them one-on-one at lunch or a group of three of them at lunch, probably they don't say those things, but as a department they do. It could be budget restraints, you know, just economics. But at HIMSS, they never say that. They always say, and they put it on a list. And the thing is, it never comes off the list. And every time we're going to do a firmware update or we're going to develop the next generation, all of those items are still there. Things that we forgot we even put there, they're there. They never take them off the list. When we tell them, take them off the list, they don't. They say, oh, you don't want it in this product? but they don't take it off the list. So it's really was really refreshing to work with people in engineering who have that type of an approach to the products. You know, development in this field actually takes a lot of money, more money than this field generally has, and that's why we tend to follow, you know, commercial electronics, their trends, and we tend to lag 2-3 years behind for the most part. But there's a real challenge to try to keep up, and with apps, you know, in iPads and iPhones and, computer software. First it started with computer hardware, then it started with computer software, then it got into tablets and apps. And so we're sort of catching up. So when a lot of products are being introduced these days, there are accessibility features already built in. Whereas in the old days, everything was some type of adaptive technology. That's the only way you could get accommodated, was with adaptive technology. We don't use the term adaptive very, very often anymore. We talked about accessibility. And so, you know, it's come a ways. A lot of companies, even big companies, I don't know if you know this, they have accessibility specialists in companies. Big companies, Comcast, Amazon, who was speaking earlier, if any of you were here for the technology meeting. I'm talking big companies. You know, in the 1980s, mid-80s, IBM had specialists, but now Google has specialists and Apple has specialists. There's a lot of big companies, mainstream companies. Amtrak has specialists. But what they try to do is they try to build accessibility considerations for all types of people with disabilities. Even things that we wouldn't imagine are disabilities tend to be disabilities. We often look at the more physical disabilities in our field because they're talking about vision. But accessibility specialists talk about everything. People with a sore back who can't lean over enough or can't sit down for a long enough period of time. So it's a pretty broad field, and companies employ accessibility specialists now. And they try to get those considerations into the design specifications of any product, whether it's hardware, software. They try to interface with other devices that are already out there in the world. And so that's a good trend that's starting. But this field of accessibility is kind of not well-defined. There's about four groups of accessibility certification, or they're trying to get certification. So it's a developing area. So there's good prospects for the future. So talking about products, I tend to talk more about hardware products, but I know a lot about software products as well because I use several of them. In terms of hardware, last year HIMSS came out with a product called eBot. Have any of you heard about eBot, seen eBot? Yes, no? Oh, then that's good that I'm going to talk about eBot a little bit today. eBot is actually going to be in the exhibit hall at the HIMSS table tomorrow. eBot was actually the first, and actually still is, the only video magnifier that will display the camera's magnified image and other features of the image on an iPad screen. So I've been at some of the magnification stores around the country that some of the dealers have, and I've seen, mostly it's seniors actually, interestingly enough, they come in with an iPad, and they say that they want to read on their iPad, but they need it enlarged. And they're talking about, you know, they want to take something from hard copy print, and they want to see it on their iPad enlarged. And of course, what normally happens is, the salesperson in the store says, well, let's sit you down in front of this big video magnifier with a 24-inch screen. The person says, yeah, but I want to see it on my iPad. You know, they're used to working with their iPad. And who thought about, you know, 5-7 years ago, who thought that low-vision people would be using 9.7-inch screens? Because the culture at that time was, you have low vision. You need everything bigger. So that's how video magnifier screens, which were in the 80s and the early 90s, they were 12-inch and 14-inch for the most part. Some, the big ones were 19-inch. That's how they became, everybody started using 22 and 24-inch and 27-inch. Bigger, bigger, bigger is better, right? Well, not always. And so HIMSS sort of looked at it, and we also looked at the school market and said, you know, there's a lot of kids using iPads as well. And people think iPads are going to solve the problems of the world. They may, or tablets, they may, but probably they're going to fall to the next successor of technology at some point. Just like taxis are kind of falling their way to Uber, right? Whoever saw Uber coming 5 years ago? Because in the last 3 years, there were more Uber rides than taxi rides in the United States the month of June. And thereafter, there were more Uber rides. Interesting how technology changes. So we developed the eBot, and because we were thinking about kids as well, eBot is a camera that is portable. There's two models that weigh 5 pounds. There's one model that weighs 7. It's foldable, and it can do writing magnification. It can be positioned to look at a distance and do distance viewing. So someone like myself can go in from my office. I can take it from my office into our conference room, and we have a boardroom meeting table. I can sit across the table from the 55-inch monitor where my staff is presenting a PowerPoint presentation, showing a budget, showing the forecast at the end of a quarter, doing reviews of the forecast. I can actually point the camera, and I can see it on my iPad. Okay? And I can move around using my finger if I want, just touch screen. I can move it around by pressing buttons on a remote control. So it does reading, writing, and distance. But the eBot will also do OCR text-to-speech. If I wanted to, it can actually snap a picture of a printed document, take 5 to maybe 15, 20 seconds to process it, and it can read it to me as well. So if my eyes get tired, or if I get lazy, or if I just want to have a change and not read for a while, I can listen. So reading, writing, distance, and OCR. It'll connect to an iPad tablet. It'll connect to Android tablets. And it'll also connect to a PC, desktop or laptop, connect to Mac, and it will connect to larger monitors if you want. If you want to just connect it to a monitor, you can connect it to your monitor. So it has versatile connectivity. One of the key things is, how does it connect to an iPad or an Android tablet? Because you can't, an iPad or an Android tablet, the reason why other video magnifiers don't connect to it is because there is no cable. There's no video input cable that you can take from a camera and plug it into an iPad or an Android tablet. They have a video out. You can take the video out from a USB connection on the iPad or Android, and you can then put it into a larger monitor. But you can't take a video and put it in via a cable to an iPad or an Android. So how we did it was by Wi-Fi. So eBot is its own Wi-Fi hotspot, and the eBot camera basically takes the picture, sends it to through its own Wi-Fi chip directly into the iPad or Android that is synced over Wi-Fi. So you go into settings on your iPad, and you go into Wi-Fi, and eBot will be one of the devices. So when you go into the exhibit hall, if you have your smartphone, just go into settings, then Wi-Fi on your smartphone, and you'll see eBot is one of the devices. You won't be able to connect to it, because it's going to already be connected to an iPad. And it's only a single user, only one user at one time. Technically, if I was setting up the eBot in the booth, and if I turned the eBot on, and before I could get my iPad synced with it, with the Wi-Fi, if you got your iPad synced with it first, you could get the image. But actually, I could have put if I didn't put a password in, then I could protect myself if I put a password in that you could never get my image. That was something that was quite, groundbreaking in our field, that video magnifiers could start to display on tablet screens. Yes. What is LiveStream? Let me try to explain that. I know what it is in general, but not in specific. To a group. Right. So it's kind of like joinme.com or one of those broadcasting, live streaming broadcasting. So what the question is can you take an image from the eBot, and can you then show it on a larger screen through like a streaming service? And the answer is no, because eBot is right now designed as a single user interface. In the future, with a firmware update that we do have planned, no date on when that will come out, But we do have a broadcasting Wi-Fi feature that we intend to design, and you would select it from the menu of the eBot, whether you're going to operate in single-user mode or in broadcast mode. And so it's going to open up a lot of possibilities, including that possibility that you describe, that essentially it works as a projector in that sense, a magnified projector. True. Right. Right. Do we happen to have two microphones? Do we know? Okay. Yeah, that would be good. If someone has a question, we'll run a microphone. Wayne or I will run a microphone over to you. Yeah, Wayne will do that while I'm presenting, and I'll do the opposite for him when he's presenting. I think the comment was that it would not only be good for someone with low vision, but it would probably be good for all the people who are sighted, sitting farther back in a room. You know, their glasses are made for certain distance, even when they put their glasses or have their contacts in. And a lot of times those projection screens, the contrast is not that good also. But yes, there will be a broadcast Wi-Fi capability coming out for the eBot. eBot has actually been out for more than a year now. It started shipping in September of last year, and still there actually are not any other companies that take the image, you know, from a camera and Wi-Fi it in to an iPad. There are a couple of products. I'll mention them. I'm not here only to talk about HIMSS products, so feel free to ask me about anything. I pride myself in being a walking encyclopedia about low vision devices. But there's a product called Revolution. It's from a company who's kind of putting the pieces together up in Chico, California, North State Assistive Technology. And they've taken a monitor with a camera on an arm, and then they've attached the camera to the monitor. They have a separate OCR camera that's attached to the monitor off on the side. So the live camera that's going to magnify for your reading and writing, that is on an arm that is in the front, of kind of comes up above or atop the monitor, but a little bit in the front, maybe 6 inches in the front. The OCR camera actually jets out from the side, the left side of the monitor as you're sitting in front of it. It's a small camera, though. It's a rather thin, small camera, maybe only about 2 inches wide, about 10 inches long. So that camera would be used for scanning a printed document. Then it has the software built in to speak it back to you. And I think this Revolution connects to a 22-inch Android screen. So it's a 22-inch screen you're looking at. Unlike what the eBot is doing, eBot, when you connect to a tablet, you can connect to that 22-inch Android if you buy that 22-inch Android. You can connect to it. But most of the customers of eBot are using it with, you know, 9.7-inch iPad screens or similar size Android screens. So this concept's a little different, and it's an all-in-one device, so it's not as portable as the eBot, because eBot's intended just to be the camera portion. You take it with you with whatever device you want that day. You want to connect it to your iPad, you can connect it to your iPad. If you want to take your MacBook, then you connect it to your MacBook when you get to school. If you went to Las Vegas, you didn't want to take anything with you, you can just connect it to the LCD monitor in the hotel room and use it there. But the Revolution is kind of interesting because it's an all-in-one. But it's more intended to reside wherever you locate it. But it's pretty interesting from that point of view. It does kind of what eBot does, reading, writing, distance, and OCR, but it does it on, you know, a transportable desktop-style design. Called the Revolution to Go, which is actually I'm not sure of the size of the screen they're using. It might just be a 7-inch Android tablet. And they have a stand for it. And the stand is just a commercial stand that they get off Amazon. So they connect that screen, but it's loaded. That Android is loaded with speech, loaded with scanning software. And you can actually put, because the Android has a camera, so you can actually put a document down, and that's the camera from the Android screen will see the document, magnify it, display it magnified on the screen. If you want to then snap a picture of that page and have it read it to you, it can do that. It doesn't have distance viewing like the eBot does, but it's an Android type of tablet, somewhat portable system. The arm doesn't fold, and it doesn't all come in a bag. You'd have to get your own, you know, case for it. So even though they call it Revolution to Go, you know, the packaging isn't quite completed. And this is a new product I just saw at the Blinded Veterans Convention. They showed it, I believe, for the first time there. But I think if North State Assistive Technology is here at the conference, you can see their table and look at the Revolution and the Revolution to Go. So that's a concept that's based on getting the image to an Android tablet. But they're basically just taking the image from the camera that comes with the Android tablet screen. And you'll see a difference of image quality between that and an e-bot, just because the process is very different. So those are a couple of products. Yes, it's iPad and Android. E-bot is PC as well, so Windows. It works with, so for example, I have a Microsoft Surface. That's what I use for my business computer. And it's a Microsoft Surface Pro 3. And the e-bot can Wi-Fi with a Windows device as well. So I just Wi-Fi connect it to my Microsoft Surface. But it can connect to any PC that has Wi-Fi. If it doesn't have Wi-Fi, it can connect with the PC via USB. 2.0 or 3.0, depending on your connection you have on your PC. It'll work with MacBooks. With a MacBook, it's either, right now there's no Wi-Fi to MacBooks. With an upcoming firmware release, which probably will be released in January, it can Wi-Fi to a MacBook as well, but right now it can only connect via USB 3.0 port with the e-bot. Then, of course, the e-bot will connect to any monitor that has an HDMI video input. HDMI is an HD quality. So the camera of the e-bot is a 1080p, which is true HD. And if we connect to an LCD monitor using an HDMI connection, we're going to preserve the 1080p full HD resolution for image quality and clarity. We do provide an adapter. So if your monitor does not have an HDMI, it only has a DVI connection, then we provide an adapter, but that will downgrade the video from 1080p to 720p. 720p is partial HD. It's not full HD, just a drop down in the resolution. We don't provide, if your monitor only has a VGA connection, we don't provide an adapter, but you can get one from Amazon. We know of a couple we could recommend that you buy because we know it works. And then you would be downgrading to VGA or XVGA resolution, but that's not HD any longer. Are there other questions about e-bot or Revolution? I can move on to describe some of the other products that maybe some of you haven't seen because it's been a year that you've met, and I've seen some of these products at conferences that I've attended. For example, Optilec recently began showing, and I understand from their local representative that he doesn't even have brochures on it yet, although the product's been started shipping in September, a product called Traveler. Some of you may remember, if you can remember way back, Optilec had a portable video magnifier called Traveler. So this is their new Traveler. And this is a 12-inch screen. It weighs 4 pounds. Comes in a canvas-type case. And the unique thing about it is, for the first time, this is a clever design. Are some of you familiar with Amigo, a 7-inch portable, or 6-inch or 7-inch portable, or Sapphire, Freedom Scientific? Okay, you know how those 7-inch, maybe, well, the Optilec Compact 7. You know how these units sit on rollers? They usually have 4 rollers. And you have to roll it left, and the whole unit rolls from left to right to read. And then you have to roll it back to the left and go down to the next line. So the whole unit's rolling. Well, what Optilec's done now is only the monitor rolls. The monitor is actually mounted, and it's a very clean design. I mean, the ergonomics, the look, the aesthetics is very nice. It's actually, Optilec's known to have very aesthetically pleasing products. They design products that look very nice, very consumer-oriented. But the monitor is actually mounted on a slide at the bottom. You don't see the slide, but it glides along. So only the monitor moves, not the whole unit. And it moves very easily, very smoothly. And you can actually read a whole newspaper without having to change the position. If you position it properly, if I shouldn't say a whole newspaper. If you fold a newspaper in half, Then if you position the traveler properly, you don't ever have to move it up or down, forward or back. It can actually read the whole newspaper just by angling the monitor a little bit because of where the camera is located in the back of the monitor. And the image quality is very good. And most of the portable units have been more in the very portable, under 10-ounce category that I call portable units, like the 3.5 or 4.3 or 5-inch size screens. And then it jumps up to the 7-inch screens, which normally get up to about 1.5 to 2 pounds in weight. And now they're trying to close that gap, and Optilec come out with a 12-inch. So there's a new traveler from Optilec. To give you an idea of some of the prices, by the way, going back to EBOT, EBOT has three models. The EBOT Basic is reading, writing, and distance only. But all EBOT models have the same connectivity to iPads, Androids, PCs, Macs, and LCD monitors. And that's $2,500. Then there's an EBOT Advanced, which we add OCR text-to-speech. So now it can take a picture and read out loud. But it doesn't take a picture of the full page. It can only do a half a page at a time. So two snapshots, you can get your full page. And that's $300 more at $2,995. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's $500 more in my math here. I need Dr. Janinski to help me with my math. So it's $2,995. Then we have the EBOT Advanced, and that can snap a picture of a full page and read a full page back to you. It also has a built-in motor, and it's the only motorized video magnifier on the market. And what the motor is for is portable units don't have an XY table, right? By definition, you don't want to be adding XY tables because they add bulk, add weight. So what it has is a motor built in, which does add weight. That's the difference between the EBOT, EBOT Advanced, which weigh 5 pounds, and the EBOT Pro, which has the motor built into the camera. That adds 1.25 pounds, so it's now 6.25 pounds. But what the motor's for is you can have a joystick, and you just sit with your joystick and move the joystick left, right, up, or down, and the camera's moving like an XY table. A lot of young people like that because they're into joysticks, right, with all the video games. But it's quite intuitive. I was very surprised how easy and how much control you feel you have. It doesn't skew like when people use an XY table, it skews a lot. So, and so that's another feature of the Pro. Plus with the Pro, it has an SD card slot, so you can actually save your scanned images onto an SD card slot and take it to your computer. Or you can capture an image if you just want to capture an image at the front of a room, picture of a teacher, and you want to capture it and email it to someone, you can do that. But you'd have to capture it on the SD card and take it to your computer in order to email it, for example. But you have the capability of saving with the Pro. Now that price then jumps up to $3,800. Okay? The Revolution that I was talking about, that has a 22-inch screen, Android tablet-type screen, with a camera for live reading and writing and distance, and then a separate attached camera on its left side for OCR scanning and text-to-speech, that one is $3,800 as well. Okay? And the Revolution To Go, which was the smaller Android screen, that one is $2,995. That one doesn't have any distance. Okay? And the Traveler is $2,495 from Optilec. I actually got an email today from Freedom Scientific. Well, they don't know they sent it to me. It's a proxy name. if they knew I was on their mail list, they probably wouldn't send it to me. So I do have a few proxy names out there just so I can keep in touch with technology. I'll admit that I actually own products from other brands, even though I'm the president of HIMSS. If it works for my low vision, why shouldn't I buy it, right? HIMSS doesn't make a product for everybody. For the right person, we make good products for them. So they came out with an Onyx portable camera. They have an Onyx, which is in the category, you've heard of Onyx, is in the same category as Acrobat, the Enhanced Vision Acrobat. Those are like 17, 19, 22, 24-inch type screens that have a camera mounted on it for reading, writing, and distance. That version doesn't do OCR, text-to-speech. They normally range in price from about $18.95 to $29.95. So the Onyx Portable is just the camera portion of it, the camera with an arm type portion of it. They just announced that. So I don't have details about it, but you might want to check the Freedom Scientific booth or their dealer. Not sure if the company or the dealer will be here. But let's ask them about that and see if they have their product or what they could tell you about it. I'm quite sure they'll have the Onyx at the table. But you might want to ask them about the new Onyx that was just announced today. And I don't have a price on that one. Freedom Scientific, though, talking about them, in January this year, I believe it was, they introduced the Topaz PhD, obviously intended for the school market, PhD, kind of a motivational product name for students. So the Topaz Doctor, it comes in two versions, 12-inch and 15-inch screen, but the genius about that is how it folds up and compacts into an 8-pound unit. You don't even need a screen. It just folds up very easily, actually. About three motions will compact it. And then it actually has a handle. You can just grab it by the handle and hold it. And it's quite evenly balanced. Part of the problem with portables, when we fold up portables, is when you are transporting it, it's back heavy or, you know, it's heavy on one side. But the Topaz PhD, when you grab the handle and hold it, it actually feels evenly balanced, and it's only 8 pounds. So it comes in two versions, a 12 and a 15-inch model. The prices start at around $21.95, but you can add a battery to it. You can add an XY table to it. So by the time you add features, you could get up to close to $3,000. But you have a portable unit that compacts very quickly, very easily, very simply. It's kind of well protected the way it collapses. They've done a very good industrial design on that product. Are there any new products any of you have heard of that you want to share? Or you want to know something about if you haven't seen it, or you want to know if it might be here with one of the vendors? The audience. Any of you? I can't see you just like you can't see me. So I'm putting you to sleep? I'll regard that as a talent. not a problem. I'm not offended. Technology, you know, technology, that's a good point, though, that you're making, really, because technology expands exponentially. Yeah, what she was saying is that she's kind of, I'm putting her to sleep. No, not really that I'm putting her to sleep. She's just feeling sleepy. And the technology conversation sometimes can put her to sleep. But it can me as well. You know, Ray Kurzweil, you've all heard the name Ray Kurzweil, right? So he's a genius. I mean, no doubt about it. And he talks about it, but a lot of engineers talk about it, engineers at Google and so forth, about how technology, more and more, it's expanding exponentially. And the brain, the human brain, does not expand exponentially. It expands arithmetically. And that's why technology can pass us by so quickly. So unless you make a commitment to dedicate the time to stay current as a techie, it's going to pass you by. So I was once a techie in 1993. I'm not a techie anymore. It passed me by. My brain can't handle the exponential technology change. And Dr. Wayne Dick is going to speak next. He knows that very well. So don't feel, you know, ask questions. That's why we're here to help each other. Ask questions about technology. We were once where you were, where you are now. We were once there. Yes, question here somewhere? Oh, right here. Okay.
I'm just wondering with the Kindle. I like the Kindle, but it has a lot of problems. When it initially opens up, it's too small print, so I'm on my magnifier with it. Will that ever change? And then the other question is the Wi-Fi sometimes has problems, especially when you're in an area where there's not a lot of Wi-Fi. I was in New Jersey recently out in the boonies, and a lot of problems there with the Wi-Fi, but at home it's fine. And I like my Los Angeles Times, my New York Times, and that's, you know, I can get the large print once I get through the initial screen. So I was wondering if there's any more new things coming out with the Kindle.
You know, we've been arguing with Amazon quite a bit about this issue. And I don't have a lot of hope. I mean, they actually last year filed to ask for a waiver so that they could not have the normal 508 laws apply to them because they weren't web technologies. So don't know about that. It's kind of sad. And the fact that they've taken away the text-to-speech. I used to like to watch the screen and do text-to-speech at the same time. It was fun. And I can't do that anymore, so don't know. But, I mean, I like reading the books on it. And I can show you how to put a Bookshare book on it, too.
So there are some tricks. And so ask some of the people like Dr. Wayne Dick when he's here. There are some tricks you can use for Kindles. But pretty much it's a closed system unless Amazon decided to do it, which maybe they can't. Maybe some of the algorithms that it's written on or some of the foundation that it's designed on maybe won't allow them to. They'd have to design a totally new system. However, for some of you that were here earlier at the technology committee meeting, Amazon was here. They showed some products, the new Amazon tablet. They showed a few different size models, ranging from about $50 in price to $229. The top-of-the-line model is a 10-inch screen. It's a 10-inch tablet. It's the new Amazon Fire HD. So it's not a Kindle. It's actually a tablet that is based on an Android platform, but it's an Android platform that's special to Amazon. Okay, so Amazon didn't design something new. So you don't really have, iOS, which is your iPads, and then you have Android, which is the platform for many of the other, anything that's almost non-Apple is an Android in the tablet world. But now you're going to have an Amazon. It's based on Android, but it's a proprietary Android. And that was here earlier today, and I believe that they're going to have a table here. Or those of you who know Peter Canasani, you can certainly ask him. Peter Korn is here for some of you that know Peter Korn, or ask around for one of the two of them, the two Peters. They'll be more than happy. They brought the devices with them, so they do have the devices they could show you. And I'm not sure how much this new tablet will actually do what the Kindle does. So maybe that, and it does have some accessibility features, like they announced that they designed from the ground up a voice system that's similar to VoiceOver for the iPads and iPhones, called Voice View. And so they've now designed their own speech system. Speech output, that is, not speech input. So there may be some hope, but maybe not with the Kindle. It's with new products they're designing.
There's a really old Kindle that you can get refurbished. You can't even buy them new anymore. It's this, what is it, DX. And it reads out loud. And it gets really big print, and it has all the old systems on it, and those worked better. And I just have been replacing my DXs forever because I can actually use them. And I think that with the iPad and the Kindle and each one of these regular systems, we really need to press for things we need. For example, I don't know if you've noticed that when you change to VoiceOver on an iPad, they completely change the touch protocol because they just assume that anybody who needs reading can't see at all, and they need a completely different touch interface. And actually, as it turns out, the standard touch interface is a lot better for a lot of people with low vision, and there's no way to decouple those two things. And so that when we talk to our vendors, we want to sort of point out some of those things that are difficult, where they make an assumption that, oh, you have low vision, we'll give you the blind interface, because it won't necessarily work for you. Should I just go on to what I'm saying, or is it about time?
Yeah, I'll just wrap up, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think this is a good transition, you know, to what Wayne Dick will be speaking about. So just to wrap up, you know, take advantage of the exhibitors that are here. I will say that this is an opportunity for you. I know you want to be involved in a lot of the meetings, but, you know, if you can spend some time with some of this technology, you don't need to spend a lot of time. You can always call the vendors after. Okay, you can always see the products again later. But the exhibits provide you with an opportunity to just come up to a table and say, what do you have? And they might, you know, most of what they're going to say, you might say, well, that's too expensive for me. You might say, that's not for me. I'm low vision. That's Braille for someone who's blind. I don't know Braille. So it's not how many things they have that you can't use or you can't afford. It's how many, or if you can find that one or two that can help you and is the right product for you and you can afford or you can wish for it. Sometimes wishing helps. saving for 3 years, I've known people that saved a long time. So I would like to encourage you, because I think a lot of people don't take the time just to, you don't have to go and spend, you know, a lot of time with any particular vendor. Just go around and find out what's there. Go around and just, even if you only have time to get a brochure or get a card so you have their website, go and look at it later when you get back home. But take advantage of the resources of what's in the exhibit hall. And you, like I say, you can always call a vendor and say, what's the next conference that's going to be in Southern California? Or, you know, can you show it to me? Or can I see it at the Braille Institute? Do you have your products at the Braille Institute or at the Center for the Partially Sighted? So there's a lot of ways you can see products outside of the exhibit hall, so you don't have to spend a lot of time on just one product. And if you get tech overloaded, so do a little bit one day. Spend 15 minutes one day, spend 15 minutes the next day. You don't have to get tech overloaded all in one day. So, and if you, I will be here the whole time. I'm staying here. Damian Pickering from HIMSS will be here for anyone who either you need products because you're more blind or than low vision functioning, or if you know of someone, you've come with someone. Damian Pickering, who used to be with HumanWare for the last 6 or 7 years, has joined HIMSS, and Damian will be at our HIMSS booth as well. So there's me for low vision and Damian for our blind products. And we're perfectly willing, if you want to know who else is in the hall or what other products, you know, I'm perfectly happy walking you over to another booth and giving you an introduction. I'm here to help other people with low vision. I'm one of you. And I feel it. You know, I'm passionate about it. That's why I've stayed in this field for so long. There's nothing else I could imagine doing. And I'm very passionate about what Dr. Wayne Dick is going to talk about, because he's talking about how things are changing for people with low vision and how we have to advocate. And that's very important. He's right here, right now. I'm going to give him the microphone. Dr. Wayne Dick, take it over.
Thank you. Now, I'm going to talk about something different. Are you Jim or James?
James.
James talks about, you know, after they've taken the computerized data and turned it into a book and it's ruined for us. I'm going to talk about how we capture that stuff before it gets ruined, so that we can make it large print and we can listen to it, and what it takes to make that happen. What I'm going to talk about, and this is going to be the term that you're going to hear being used from here on out, electronic documents that we can read are now all under one category: digital information technology documents. I just call them DIT documents, but my wife looked at it and called them DIT documents. Okay. Now, accessible digital information is about to be lost for people with low vision. What happened was, around 2000, we came out with a set of guidelines for digital information technology, and it was called Section 508. And in the interim, the technology, of course, changed so wildly that we needed new guidelines. And what happened was, they wanted to take everything that was an information technology document and have a consistent set of guidelines for all of them. And what they did was they took away a particular guideline for websites that allowed a person who knew how to do it to remove the way that the author styled the page and change the page so it looked like you wanted the page to look. Now, here is what is possible today. If you like light on dark, but you don't like the standard can light on dark, so you'd like maybe a little grayer and a little, you know, maybe a little subtler, you can get that today. If you like the APH font from the printing house for the blind, you can have all your documents in that font. If the letters are just a little bit too close together, you can spread them out just a little bit. If the lines are a little too close together, you can spread them to exactly the size that you want. And if you don't like having to shift left and right to read, you can just have it so it all fits on the screen. And how big of an enlargement can you get it? Well, I would say that for... Now, he was talking about 7-inch screens. However, you can get a Lenovo laptop, which is a sort of a laptop template. It weighs 2.1 pounds, which ain't heavy at all. And you can fit 15 characters that are 1.5 inches high on that screen widthwise. And 5 lines. That's a pretty good fit, and that gets anyone with who needs to see things 10 times larger. So, you know, there are portable solutions for reading these days, but the Access Board is writing new 508 rules, and they've removed our ability to do that. Right when you probably just found out you had the ability to do that. It's being taken away for several reasons. Okay, now, the new 508 rules are being written. They're called the 508 Revise. There is a provision, and I will have a printed out letter that anybody could sign and send to the Access Board, asking to restore the functionality of 1194.22d, which is the one that says you can remove the author's style, that means their small print in 12 columns, and replace it with large print in 1 column in any colors you want and any font you want, and replace it with something that is functionally equivalent. So that's important. Now, what is a digital information technology document? A digital information technology document is different than the scanned documents that James was talking about. A digital information technology document is a document where you can read everything that is intended to be a character with a computer. So, for example, every HTML document is a digital information technology document because a browser can read it and know what all the characters are. PDF is the same thing because Acrobat can read it. And .doc files are the same thing because Word can read them. And DAISY is one because digital talking book readers can read DAISY. So there's a lot of them. And if they're built correctly, you can really do a lot with them. And the law, the 508 rules, are the rules that determine how something is built correctly. Now here's the rub. If a manufacturer passes the 508 rules, and those rules don't have what's needed to support people that have low vision, you have no way of filing a civil rights complaint to get that done. I mean, Lainey Feingold has told me she won't take up my case because there's nothing in the current guidelines that will protect me. And, you know, Lainey will take on just about anybody. So that's kind of where it's at. So the rules are being changed now, and this capability is being lost. Now, I want to go through a little bit more because I have some examples. And this is really just sort of the introduction to what I'll be talking about on Saturday, because I'm going to really talk a lot more about what you can do with digital information files. I'm going to talk about what work is being done to really make them accessible for people with low vision. And I can get into detail, but I really wanted to talk about that. I turned that off because it kept blinking. And I thought, well, my God, I don't want to give anyone a seizure, you know, just because they're sitting here in the room. Since no one can see that one, that's too small. I thought, you know, I actually set up the font so that if that had been a normal size screen, a lot of you actually would have been able to read it for one of the first times you went to a conference. But we can't. But if we look at the conference page for this conference, this turns out to be one that is constructed all right. And as a result, we can enlarge it really well. Okay, and now you notice it kind of flies off the edge. We can fix that. I'll show you that fixed later on. Now, there's a little problem when you have a word like conference, and you have, well, this is probably 300-point font or something like that. When you have something like conference that doesn't fit on the screen, the best I can do for you is I can split this off and put the rest of the word down below it. But every single whole word will always be on a screen unless you really look at them big. Okay. Okay, now, probably looks like a nice gray design for most of you right now with a little blue flare on the top. Okay, well, it looks pretty much like a gray design with a blue flare on the top to me right here. So, okay, but this is the normal browser's font size. Now, one of the things you can do is say, for example, on your... just on your browser, Firefox, and you want to use Firefox because it obeys the law better than anybody else. On your normal browser, Firefox, you can push down the control button, you can push down the plus button, and the font gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's even a command there where you can say, only enlarge the text. Then the pictures don't get bigger, other stuff doesn't get bigger, and a lot of times every single thing stays right on the page. Unless you have a word that's too long and it slops away. So that's the stuff you can get for free, and you can do a lot of reading that way. Okay, now let's go back. Yes, okay. Yes. Control plus, yes. Yes. Okay, now in Firefox, see, they usually give it to you this way without the menu. But if you press the Alt button, the menu appears. And if you go over to View and then go down View to Zoom, and you see it says Zoom text only. Okay? That's a very useful thing. It can save you from having to bump up the whole screen with a screen magnifier a lot of times. Now, I have to tell you, a lot of pages suck. When you do this to them, the columns all bleed into each other. Where you're supposed to have like a entry box, you know, the print slops all out of it. That's actually a violation, but it's not much of a violation because they basically made these new guidelines like they were using paper. So they only allow 200% enlargement. So really, I mean, most people aren't even classified as having low vision unless they have something worse than 20/60, which means that they probably need more like 250 or 300% enlargement. Now that, you know, the 200% rule made a lot of sense with text because if you think about it, every increase in size, basically you square the number of pages you need. So for example, if you have 2 times the enlargement, then you're going to have to take 4 times the number of pages to print it. If you have 3 times the enlargement, then you have to do 9 pages for every page. So for example, if you did 5 times enlargement on paper, you know, just for a novel, you'd have kind of an encyclopedia. So when they make these guidelines of 200% for paper, it's because that's really all you can print. But once you're on a computer, really the sky is the limit. It's whatever fits on the screen. And once you've eliminated horizontal scrolling, it's just you just scroll your way through an entire novel. And I do scroll my way through entire novels that way. So it really can be done quite well. Okay, I'm going to pump this up again. The thing about images of files is that OCR isn't perfect. About the best OCR. Are you getting better than, James, are you getting better than 99.5% on your OCR? It's good, but if you think about it, in 1,000 words, that's about 10 words that are off. If you're trying to read something difficult, those could be significant words. So the difference between having, digitally readable documents that give you 100% accuracy versus 97.5 is important. Now, I'm not knocking what James does because, James is basically taking stuff that is out of question. This is how I got my PhD, was because of technology like that. And everything I have to read in science, I still have to do that with because science isn't developed yet. So we're really trying, and that's what all of us are after, is to eliminate that having to go back. What we found with horizontal scrolling is that people forget the first of the line when they get to the end of the line. And so they have to go back, then they have to go up, and it takes about 18 to 50% longer just to read a document. And these are documents that are standardized at fourth grade, so it won't be hard for anybody. It takes about 18 to 50% more time to read if you have to horizontal scroll. It just does. And if you think about it, there's really 3 things that happen. You have to think about stuff you can't see. It's the same with a magnifying glass. You have to, if you think about it, only 1 line on the page is anything but noise. All the rest of the lines are just junk because there's only 1 line that's continuous. So we already have enough time, problem filtering out figure from ground. That's a lot of our problem. And this is noisier. And then the last thing is you have to think about navigating in 2 directions rather than just 1 direction. You put all that together and people read slower and make more mistakes. Okay, now here's the thing. The new guidelines, really basically the only assistive technology they recognize, even with digital files that are can be restructured, is screen magnification. So they're treating everything basically like it's an image of a page. They're not really treating stuff like it's a page. Now, the new guidelines, I have to be really honest, they're better for people who are blind. And if we had assistive technology and we had the access we needed to get in there and use these guidelines, they would be better for us. But unfortunately, the best forms of assistive technology are not in the same model as screen readers, and so we don't get to use it. And so I just learned about that it was this week, so I haven't rented a table, but I'm going to see if I can get a table, and I'll sit out and talk to people, and we can go over what I'm reading here, and you can actually see it. We can even play around a little and try and get you the colors and the fonts and things that you might like. And out in the work area.
Mike,
yes?
You did mention about the new guidelines. I didn't catch who was it that developed it.
Okay, that's the U.S. Access Board. The way that it works was that in 1973, there was the U.S. Rehabilitation Act, and it basically opened the world for people with disabilities. And part of that was to create guidelines for information technology. And those guidelines are held in Section 508, and they're the rules for how information technology has to be structured so that people with disabilities can use it. It's a federal board. There's a lot of industry people. There's a lot of representatives. Unfortunately, for visual impairment, probably all the representatives are blind. They have they do have a representative with low vision, but he's on the very very, very low end of low vision in terms of, well, it is. So I've been fighting internally at the World Wide Web Consortium. That's the group that writes the international standards for the web. And I've been fighting for low vision for about 7 years now, and we just got a task force. And they even invited me to be on the task force. And I fought so hard for it. I was wondering whether they'd let me be on the task force because I had to make people a little mad to get them to change. And but we do have one, and we will be looking at it. But the problem is they're going to change these rules now, and the last time they changed these rules was 8 years ago. And so if we have to wait another 8 years, the technology will have changed so much that, you know, we'll have to figure out how to make it accessible again. And by then they may be able to say, well, it's just too hard. I'm going to abandon what I was talking about here for a second, and I'm just going to say this. A lot of us have mobile phones. I got a 6-inch one. It's pretty good. Can't read the web on it, but I can dial my phone numbers. Okay, so, well, what happened when they went to the mobile web? Well, the first thing that happened was they had a whole bunch of web pages that I call shrink-to-fit web pages. They just took the web page that was out on the web for a 20-inch monitor, and they just threw it on your 4-inch cell phone and said, good luck. Well, of course, normal readers were doing their pinch enlargement, and guess what? They didn't like horizontal scrolling. And what happened? Well, what happened was the industry within 2 years created two technologies, one called mobile first technology and the other called responsive web design. And guess what? Web pages on cell phones, the same web page looks different on a cell phone than it does on the big monitor. And what they did is they developed technology to automatically detect how long a line could be, and then they changed the format of the page to do it. So the point is this. Making standard print fit on a small screen is the same problem as making large print fit on a normal laptop screen. It's been solved because it's been solved for the cell phone. And basically what they're taking away in this 508 is our ability to implement that same solution for people with low vision. And that's where we are today. It's too bad because it's a lot of us did a lot of work on those guidelines, and they left that out, and that's how it is. We can't. I'm gonna see if I can get a table. I'm late. I saw the dates, and I took the one from the October, and I took the one from the first, and I squeezed them together and decided that the convention was in November. And actually, if Bernice hadn't called me up, I wouldn't be here. So, I had plans of having a whole table and everything, and I think I will have a table, and it'll have nice big print on the monitor to read it. And you can come by and talk to me, and we can play with things. I just wanted to show you one thing before I quit, and this is kind of fun. And this is how I read Daisy books. This is how I read Bookshare books. I'm going to do the Great Gatsby. Okay, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn on NVDA. Now, that's really fast because, I get impatient. Okay, but, you can slow down. It scrolled itself. Here's the best I can do right now. What I do is I fix the tab so that you can tab from paragraph to paragraph. Okay? And then you read the paragraph, and then you only have to usually just scroll up a few words, you see. And since it's out loud, I don't need as big a print as when it's not out loud. So I put it in a little bit smaller print, more fits on the page. And then if I can't see the word, I hear the word. And if I can't hear the word, I see the word, and I do pretty well. So that's how I do it. And so then I just hit tab, 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 and go through paragraph by paragraph. Now, the thing about NVDA and JAWS actually is worse on this, is they just assume... It is. Okay. The thing about JAWS is that as soon as you turn on JAWS and assume, it just makes the assumption that you're blind, and it completely disconnects normal screen use. So actually, scrolling through like that is actually pretty handy. It's like turning a page. It's not so bad if you have the size done right. But you can't do it. If you're in JAWS, the minute you touch the screen, it does a JAWS interrupt and has all this other stuff because, of course, nobody really needs to scroll the screen because nobody can see who reads JAWS. And I asked them to fix it, and they just said, we have to give preference to people who are non-visual. So I found a bug, and that is that NVDA does exactly the same thing if you install it. But if you get the portable version, it doesn't. So NVDA is accommodated to people with low vision without really knowing it. So it's actually a pretty good product. And then if you use their single character commands like H and L and I, you can jump to lists and headings and skip through very, very well. And then you can use the mouse and whatever you want otherwise. But actually, the nice thing about the touchscreen is it's completely disconnected from the touchscreen. So you can use NVDA, I think, a lot better with low vision. That's it. That's just a start. If you'd like to hear more, I am here on Saturday. 1:30. And I'll have all of this up on a web page for you. I haven't made the one for this talk, but I'll have it. Well, at Nose to the Page, where can they find me on the web? NoseToThePage.org. But you can't find me today because it's not working today. But you can find me probably tomorrow, and I'll have the link to this site as well. It's really easy to remember. It's probably how most of us read. Nose to the Page, all one word, .org. Okay?